It's day 29 of reading War and Peace in its new translation on the way to work. I figure everybody on the R train must think I'm some kind of pseudo-intellectual. Or even worse, a real intellectual.
It's the novel that everyone wants to have read. And very few people have actually read.
That's Richard Pevere. He translates in partnership with his wife, Larissa Volokhonsky.
I don't think that there is anything in this novel that a human being of ordinary intelligence cannot understand.
More on Pevere and Volokhonsky in a minute.
I mean, I don't know that War and Peace is like anything else, in Russian or otherwise.
David Goldfarb writes about and teaches college courses in the Russian novel. It is history, he observes, that caused the book to surge in popularity, especially right after Sputnik and into the 60s.
At that time, we sort of saw on American campuses these courses among Russianists, we call them Tolstoyevsky, the Tolstoy and Dostoevsky course. It was a time of war, of course. So those who were interested in the peace movement and so forth found inspiration in Tolstoy.
War and Peace, whether you had read it or not, was also visible in popular culture.
What is it, Natasha?
That included an improbable film adaptation by King Vidor with Audrey Hepburn as Natasha.
Those handsome young men marching away to fight.
It appeared in Goodbye Columbus as the whole identity of a minor character named Doris.
Doris?
She's the one who's always reading War and Peace. That's how we know it's summer, when Doris is reading War and Peace.
And it kept on coming. Woody Allen built a whole film around it in 75, mocking its introspective, philosophical nature and its complex plot.
Lev loves Tatiana. Tatiana loves Simkin. Simkin loves me.
But it found its way into mass market movies, too, like Superman.
Some people can read War and Peace and come away thinking it's a simple adventure story.
And sitcoms.
War and Peace is the greatest novel ever written. You read it between now and Saturday.
And more sitcom.
Hey, did you know that the original title for War and Peace was War, What Is It Good For?
All of this affirmed its stature as the apex of intellectual achievement. War and Peace is the rambling story, both detailed and epic, of three families in Russia during the Napoleonic Wars. It has been translated into English 8 times. The new translation, number 9, is heavy. More than 1,200 pages in this version by Pevere and Volokhonsky. It took them 3 years, which they calculate as 6 man-years, because they work in tandem. I now drag my copy of the book into the studio with them, where they sit side by side. There are hundreds of characters.
There are several hundred.
582.
There are at least 200 historic characters who actually existed. We have them all in the index.
Any translator of War and Peace becomes to some degree a student of the previous translations.
Something that Constance Garnett did in her translation in 1904 reappears in a translation done in 1959, although in neither case is it anything that is in Tolstoy.
In their case, the starting point is their own translation, Ms. Volokhonsky's, that is, from Russian to English, word by word, phrase by phrase. When she's finished, Mr. Pevere takes over and addresses the Englishness of it. And then they go back and forth, finishing it together. Starting from the bottom like this leads to discovery. And there's one discovery Richard Pevere and Larissa Volokhonsky just can't get over. It concerns a scene in which the 16-year-old Pyotr Rostov sits in the dark on his last night.
I don't know if other writers in the mid-19th century wrote a sentence like, "Drops dripped." But coming upon that in Tolstoy is very striking to me. But he was interested in the sound, in this precise, brief noise of raindrops dripping, which in Russian is kapli kapali, and which luckily we can translate into English as drops drip.
And it's all in the darkness. The whole scene takes place in the darkness. Pete only hears the noise. Kapli, kapli.
I conclude this must have been a magical moment in a translator's life to discover this phrase, and apparently it was.
Usually what happens, I translate what I see in front of me. I make a precise, very precise translation, as close to literal.
Well.
Literal translations don't exist. Only a train schedule can be translated literally. But I try to be as close to the original as possible. So if I see kapli, kapli, I say drops dripped. Now, when Richard comes upon that, as he makes his version. He comes to me and says, is this true? Is this what he wrote? I said, yes, this is what he wrote. Do what you can with it. If you can do it in English, do it. We have to be brave.
Now that their publication date has come and gone, and the book is officially launched, they can admit that there were moments of uncertainty about the whole project.
Richard didn't want to translate it. It's so long, we are no longer so young. It's such a huge work. We'll sink, we'll get buried.
But the real Tolstoy began to emerge.
As we started working, I began to see the constant humor of Tolstoy's style. It's not a joyful humor, it's sarcastic humor. But there's a great deal of social irony, social sarcasm.
Through their labors, Pavir and Volokhonsky have learned to love Tolstoy in a new way.
I came to see he portrays people so precisely. People leap out at you from the page.
How War and Peace mixes this remarkable precision and intimacy with the epic historical sweep of the book, that is one of its mysteries and its greatest triumph.
Natasha's dancing was excellent. Her little feet and satin ball slippers did their work quickly.
Listening to Volokhonsky read, I'm caught up in the prose, but also in the enthusiasm. They, who now arguably know this book as well as anyone alive, still laugh at Tolstoy's jokes and cry at his tender, empathic portrayal. David Goldfarb loves it, too.
It reads like the newspaper, like letters, like stories, like folktale, sometimes like satire, sometimes like a joke. It can combine everything in one volume, really.
Seinfeld, you can mock me. Subway Riders, you can call me what you like, but I am going to finish this book. For WNYC, on page 958, I'm Sarah Fishkin.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.